Space, the final frontier. Well, I don't want to get a suit, but...
I got so excited.
I love that. Nobody owns this final frontier.
There we go.
Yeah, I've been really getting into Star Trek lately. Excellent show. Really deals with a lot of awesome human interpersonal relationship issues in a very amazing, fun way.
Which one, though?
All of them.
All of them? They all have one thing in common, the importance of the warp drive. It's how they get around space. It's how they boldly go to places, et cetera, et cetera. I seriously don't want to get a suit, and I love that show. But what if there was a real warp drive? A number of years ago, we dug into this concept because something had hit the news, something called an EM drive. You guys remember that?
I do. A little bit, but it's been a while since we've recorded this. I think 6 years, maybe.
Wow.
So, you know what? I don't want to spoil anything, and I don't remember. So, let's jump right in. What do you say?
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
I am Ben, and we are here with our super producer, Noel, a.k.a. Ghost Walker Brown, a.k.a. Warp Level 9, a.k.a. What else?
Why not Warp Level 10 as well? I mean,
Warp
he's both.
Warp Level 10, that's dangerous.
That's like Super Saiyan Noel Brown.
Yes, it's true. And before we get started today, we want to thank those of you who wrote in with some fantastic feedback regarding our earlier episode on Jade Helm.
Oh, yes. Thank you for writing in. We got several interesting different perspectives that were apart from our own perspectives on this. And, man, it's great to read your opinions and even your little insights, especially we had someone who is a former soldier who wrote in.
Yeah, we had several on YouTube as well, some Facebook messages, some tweets. We had some people who live in the areas.
Yes.
Right? And we had some updates. And we had, you know, it's interesting because we had several people who were saying, I can assure you with absolute certainty that nothing at all is going down. It's just sensationalism, which we asked about. And then we had several people write in saying, I can assure you with absolute certainty that something is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that... that's kind of the space in which we live. There's a lot of certainty out there, but right. But not there's not a lot of evidence a lot of times behind those either side of those statements, right?
Yeah, often certainty is like an opinion or a well, this is a family show, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
So we just wanted to thank everybody for checking that out. If you have not seen or listened to our recent episodes on military exercises and the one started in July here in the U.S. called Jade Helm 15, then please do. Please do avail yourself of it. Check it out. Let us know what you think. Today we are talking about something completely different because, you know, as we said, spoiler alert, Matt and Noel and I have a few irons in the fire. We've got some schemes cooking. And as a result, we have been checking out some of our classic episodes and moving them to a new channel. And this week we did something that I really enjoyed at the time. And I still am fascinated by it.
Yes. Eloptic Energy, the Hieronymus machine.
Yeah.
Man, it's a cool idea, and anytime we talk about free energy or somehow harnessing energy that just exists
right.
in this Star Wars midichlorian world that we live in, apparently.
Yeah, like radionics, orgone. I won't add Thetans because technically, again, spoiler alert, they are ghosts.
Yeah, spirits, yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Alien ghosts.
Yes, and well, you know, perhaps one day we'll learn how to harness them without, because I
just
can't
like
really speak.
Right.
Be able to harness the Thetans inside each other. That's interesting.
Well, now that we have once again flirted with litigation by the Church of Scientology,
gotta do it at least one time per episode.
At least one time. It's in our contracts. Let's go ahead and just like a quick recap of what this alloptic energy is. You said it's sort of an ambient thing. It's supposed to be all around us, and it can be focused through these devices, these Hieronymus machines devices named after the guy who invented them, quote-unquote T. Galen Hieronymus.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Fascinating character and interesting story. He was a he was idolized by a sci-fi editor at the time, back in, you know, 50s, 40s, 60s, and he did a – somewhere in there, Matt.
Sure. Sorry. No, sure.
And this guy, Campbell, took it a step further and said, not only do these machines work, but because it's harnessing this unknown power – and listeners, I'm like pointing to my forehead like mm-hmm. a crazy person now. I assume it's Campbell assumed it was a psionic power of some sort of psychic ability. And so Campbell argued that you didn't have to build the device. You could just draw the schematic of the diagram, right?
Yeah.
And it would have the same effect.
And you could place things, objects, mm-hmm. in certain areas of this diagram on a piece of paper that you've mm-hmm. drawn it out. And you could somehow harness through that object, like a memory or a... There are all kinds of things you could do with this device, with a piece of paper and the diagram.
And, you know, with your mind.
Yes, it's all your mind.
Being your own thing, or being the primary mover, the engine here. Hieronymus himself objected to this, and although he thought Campbell's heart was in the right place, mm-hmm. his intentions were good, yada, 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 he believed that this guy had accidentally set back this science of radionics by a century or more, because the way that he built these devices is you would take a substance of some sort, a sample, and you would put mm-hmm. it in this little tray or receiving area, and then you would be able to affect that by modifying or I guess harvesting, collecting and focusing this radionic energy, which is not proven.
Certainly not proven.
Yeah.
I don't think it is out of the realm of possibilities, especially, you know, as we're starting to tackle what we're going to tackle this episode.
Ah, right. Yeah, yeah.
There might be something there. But, you know, for now, we in no way can prove this, and nobody can.
I understand. And, you know, it is quite possible that we have yet to encounter all the forms of energy affecting the reality in which we live. You mm-hmm. know, it would be tremendously arrogant to say that we have figured it all out. You know, we are still in what future historians would likely call the Dark Ages.
Oh, God.
But point being, like Hieronymus, one interesting thing, I can't remember if it made it into the video, which you should watch if you haven't watched it yet. There's this quote he has that we mentioned earlier. He's talking about setting back the science 100 years or something. Mm-hmm. He says that this is the thing, though, Matt. He says that those diagrams worked when Campbell did them. They actually were Hieronymus machines because the guy used India ink, which Hieronymus said was conductive.
Wow.
I know. I can hear the more skeptical people in our audience now, just as their eyebrows raise and their eyes roll. Oh, one of them. It made it into the studio, huh?
Yeah.
But do check it out. And this got us thinking, this concept of alloptic energy got us thinking to something that you and I have looked at several times before, like free energy or suppression of energy or suppression of technology, alternative energy, zero point energy, all these different propositions that we hear get lauded and vilified and most often just not accepted by mainstream science. Today we're going to talk about the newest version of that. But before we get there, we have to ask a question. I have to ask you a question, and it's actually one of our boss our boss's favorite questions.
Okay.
So our boss is a guy named Jason. He's our CCO, and one of the questions he likes to ask people is, what's your favorite, Star Wars or Star Trek? Or do you have one?
I think I've addressed this before on the show, maybe, and it is Star Trek. Mm-hmm. However, I did just get back from the Star Wars convention, and I was starting to turn a little bit.
Starting to turn
towards Star Wars, just because of, when you're around that kind of fandom, I think it's a bit infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're with someone like Holly Fry, who is one of the she's an editor here, I believe.
Yeah, she's an editor.
And
she's one of the hosts of
Stuff You Missed in History Class. Mm-hmm. She was with us, and she is such an avid fan that I was getting pulled that direction. But for me, the science of Star Trek, it's a bit, I would say, a little harder on the science in that it sticks a little bit closer to the known physics. Although it does extrapolate a whole bunch to get things like the warp drive.
Ah, yes. Yes.
But it's, it's trying to be as in line with it as possible. And also the social sciences aspect of Star Trek, I think, is stronger.
The post-industrial society is a neat argument, and there's a mysticism, of course, to Star Wars, right?
Oh yeah,
and a lot. I have not made a call on either of those.
Well, that's probably a smart idea, because just wait
until what?
I'm gonna get so much hate for saying that, and I'm sorry, Star Wars fans. I do love Star Wars. It's just not the same.
I love you, Star Wars, but I'm in love with Star Trek.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, but nail on the head here, man, because if we're talking about Star Trek, we're talking about the warp drive in here. And what is a warp drive?
Well, it's an engine for a spacecraft that would allow the craft and the inhabitants, everything inside it, to travel faster than light.
So everyone in the rest of the world, it's 299,792,458 meters per second.
Yeah, that seems like it might be dangerous for the hull of a ship. I'm just saying.
Well, sure. I mean, it's tough, and it's a theoretical engine, but it's tantalized humanity since we solidified the underlying laws of physics, and that's part of the problem with a warp drive, right?
Yeah, it's something that it's a dream that we've had since then, right? And the thought of being able to achieve that, man, I think it's driven a lot of people in the field right now, in the fields of physics, like that kind of dream.
Yeah, and even before we really had codified what would become the laws of modern physics, as we understand them today in 2015, there were numerous people who were building religions based off stuff seen in the heavens, writing stories about going there, staring into the sky, inventing different means of trying to discern what was happening in our nearest celestial neighbors. But the way we get there has always, or often, has in almost every single case eluded us, except for, or at least, and we're talking about manned exploration here. That's one of the big deals. But the laws of physics have been around for a long time. Philosophers knew about these. Other people explored them. Due to the slow, steady grind of history, we can't say with certitude who actually discovered these things first, because maybe a record of them doesn't remain. But what we can say is that the credit for the codification of, like, the laws of motion goes to a guy named Isaac Newton for the three laws he created.
That's right, the three laws. So the first one, that hopefully you remember these from school, guys. I vaguely do. The first law is that every object will remain at rest or in uniform motion in a straight line unless it is compelled to change its state by the actions of some internal force. So it's going to keep going where it's going or staying where it's staying unless something else comes in and knocks it. The second law concerns how the velocity of an object changes when it's subjected to an external force.
Okay.
So it slows down, speeds up, those kind of things. And the third law, this is probably the most famous law, is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And that's, you know, the idea of when a ball hits another ball that have roughly the same mass, you're going to see the ball that gets hit move in the opposite direction that the ball of which hit it.
Yes, right, exactly. And these laws so far have not been disproven, right?
No, not yet.
Not yet. And it's okay to say, it's okay to add not yet on there, because we could also add probably never will be disproven.
Sure.
But I think it's best to hedge our bets and say they haven't been disproven yet, as far as we know.
At least on Earth. We're pretty sure those are the rules, guys.
But we are faced with, again, the relative impossibility of a warp drive, or at least the appearance of impossibility, pales in comparison to the benefit that this kind of technology could give us. I mean, imagine, okay, for the Star Trek fans out there and for the Star Wars fans, just imagine every time you saw one of those long pans of the inky black and the tiny pinpricks of stars, right? This illustration of the sheer possibly unknowable size of the universe, not to mention the space in between heavenly objects, means that human beings cannot travel to another star within a person's lifetime.
Not with our current technology.
Right, yeah. And if you think about it, we're still, let's be a little crass about it, we're still like taking the liquefied remains of dinosaurs and making them explode to power space travel.
Yeah, if oil is actually made out of dinosaurs, Ben.
Well, the majority of oil is not made out of dinosaurs, as you know.
No, but that's a crazy point. That's the way we are still getting out of our atmosphere.
Yeah, into near Earth orbit, to the moon, or sending even rovers into, you know, to Mars, right? Mm-hmm. This gives us a few options then for any intrepid human beings or human groups wishing to travel beyond the stars because they got swept up in that Carl Sagan speech, right?
Well, okay, so I've got the first option. I don't know if it's really an option. I guess it is an option. Just give up.
Just give up.
Just stay put here. Put it down. Just, you know, go back, watch an episode of Daredevil, and that's it.
Well, now, or fix problems that exist on Earth.
Oh, now that's interesting.
So it's not, maybe it's a reprioritization.
Okay. That's an interesting idea. I think it's probably a bad one, but that's okay. What else can we do?
Oh, this is exciting. We could try to build gargantuan, gigantic arcs, and put a little piece of Earth in there. Human beings, animals, plants, have a biome that's slowly crawling through the ink toward some alien destination over like millions of years while entire civilizations and species rise and fall.
Like a Starship Earth kind of thing, like a little miniature version?
Yeah.
Yep. When you envision this, do you envision a spherical thing? Or do you envision like a Enterprise type thing where that's got all the, like it looks like a ship, it's just got the interior of Earth?
I envision an inevitable breakdown.
Oh.
Sorry. I don't think we could do it. I'm pretty skeptical. Maybe it's just a science fiction, but there are so many problems that we have not thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happens to a woman who has a child, mm-hmm. right? Conceives a child and then bears it to term in space and repeat that over how many generations?
Are you speaking of an evolution of what a human would become in that kind of environment?
Well, you know, over that span of time, it might be likely that certain traits would select for evolution. And I guess it also depends on how many people are there.
Yeah, right? What kind of gene pool are we talking about?
But I was just talking about the ability to survive and reproduce successfully.
Got you.
Because what happens for the first generation of children growing up in space, will their limbs, right, will probably not be as developed unless mm-hmm. there's some sort of continually functioning gravity, right? And who knows if they'll be able to reproduce.
Oh, man.
So that's one way. Clearly not perfect.
Okay.
Clearly not perfect.
All right. Well, is there any other thing we could do? Well, here is, I think, our best and closest option.
What's that?
Just let's devise a different way to travel through space.
Ah.
Right? And also a different way to get to space.
Yes.
Yeah. To outer space.
To escape Earth's gravity. Mm. So what's all this that we've been hearing for the past, year or three about people discovering a new kind of warp drive?
Well, you know, we've talked about some of the possibilities of a plasma engine. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of stories that you'll find online about different ideas for how to propel a ship once you're in space.
Yeah.
And that's where this most recent one comes in, the M drive. And this thing is fascinating in the least. It's a prototype rocket. Is it the real life warp drive? Maybe. At least that's the way it's being described. It's this gentleman named Roger Scheuer. And here's the thing. He claims his engine generates thrust by bouncing microwaves around inside this enclosed metal funnel. And since there's no mass or energy emerging from the engine, he claims that this thing can propel itself just through bouncing microwaves around inside this thing. And if that's true, this would violate some fundamental laws of physics.
Yeah, specifically the third one, kind of Isaac Newton's breakout single on his mm-hmm. EP of the Laws of Motion, which was the third law about action and reaction. According to a gentleman named Brian Koberlein, who is an astrophysicist at interview by space.com, that's one of the primary problems with this. It's what the scientist Scheuer is saying is that he is creating propulsion without a propellant, a car without gas, right?
Yes, there would still be energy expended, right? Because if you wanted to shoot microwaves into a thing, you're going to have to power whatever is firing the microwaves.
Sure, yeah, but they're saying that the thrust they're getting when none exists should be there, and there's not a reaction to mm-hmm. the action, I guess. So people have attempted several tests of this device, and listeners, you've probably heard the headlines or read mm-hmm. something about NASA testing it, right?
Yeah, well, kind of. NASA, I guess, kind of tested it, because we know NASA is a massive organization, all kinds of different moving parts, different parts of NASA, all these departments. But one of the departments is this tiny little outfit called Eagle Works. And the staff is about five scientists who test all kinds of unorthodox pieces of technology, propulsion methods. It's headed up by Dr. Harold Sonny White.
Yep.
And this group published a paper with this drop-dead sexy title. Here it goes. Anomalous thrust production from an RF test device measured on a low-thrust torsion pendulum.
Oh, is it getting hot in here?
So anyway, this was back in 2014, and it was detailing experiments that were conducted over a series of 8 days in August of 2013. Now, here's the question. What's the anomaly that's occurring here? Well, according to the reports, these engines, by the way, there are more than one. There's more than one M drive. They appear to work on some small level. So under testing, they generated anywhere from 50 to 70 micronewtons of, I guess, energy. As Professor Ethan Stiegel notes, this is less than the weight of a snowflake, which doesn't seem very substantial to me, a guy sitting in a room in Atlanta, Georgia, that doesn't know much at all about physics.
You'll also hear that in these tests, 50 to 70 micronewtons is small enough that it might not clear the rate of error in measuring it.
Aha. So, well, here's the thing, though. Even if it is that minuscule, perhaps it is just an error in testing. But if it's not, they seem to be getting this energy from nothing, no fuel.
Right. It's an idea that will send quite a few physicists into a livid huff.
Yes.
Every time you hear it. This is not the first time someone invented an M drive or something. In China, a female scientist named Wan Yang, I believe I am mispronouncing that, and I am sorry, doctor. She led a team of folks and claimed they had done it in 2012. And they were, if you look at their papers, it's pretty technical, but they were also measuring temperature as well. And then a guy named Guido Fetta claims to have invented one too. He called it the Canna drive, and this is the one that NASA EagleWorks tested. There's a difficulty here because the groups did not receive the same consistent results, and they don't agree why it's happening, and no one knows what's happening, and a lot of people are coming out of the woodwork to say, you know, this is utter bunk. And it's strange sometimes because, again, one has to be rigorous when measuring these sorts of things and have a decent methodology, but you also find like a lot of character attacks where, people are making the assumption that someone is automatically misleading the public, which I think is, I think it's funny, but I don't think it's professional.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that same thing that happens when, let's say, the bones of physics are being challenged, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone in that field knows physics and they know that this is the law and this is how it works. And when someone comes along and says, well, perhaps that's not how it works.
Right.
That's very dangerous to most of the establishment, I would say.
Yeah.
But the great thing about science is that there's an understanding that change must occur. Or at least some, if new information comes in that is valid, then the whole system can integrate that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great point. And the more extraordinary a claim is, the more extraordinary the evidence should be supporting it. That's what a lot of people, that's what a lot of people would argue, right?
So then for something like this, Ben, it would need a lot of money to be basically injected in so that there could be vigorous testing of some device like this. To the point where you could either outright prove that this is happening or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as though, I mean, it's kind of on the fringe, this little small group in NASA that's testing it.
Sure.
Because you don't want to spend a whole lot of money on something that is probably nothing.
Right. Well, let's keep in mind that NASA EagleWorks, their task is to investigate these things that have enormous risk in terms of cost and wasted money, and potentially they're playing a lottery, an R&D lottery, because potentially there could be some huge benefit. But let's go ahead and move to some pros and cons about this. So we said the skeptics have some massive problems with this. What are some of the cons?
Well, the first one is fairly obvious. Why are the results of testing these M drives consistent? If you're using a technology that is emerging like this and you could lock down the variables, then you should get the same results every time or very similar results.
Mm-hmm. And then we also know that they were saying, of course, are the biases of the scientists skewing the test. You can read a piece on Forbes about the M drive by Siegel, I think the guy we mentioned earlier. And in that, you can tell it reads as though Professor Siegel has just had it up to and over here and down the street and up the road with this thing, because he sounds like an angry person on this. And he makes some very valid points too. He says, why aren't they the same results? How do we know that something else didn't come in? But he also said, the guy in charge of NASA EagleWorks I think the phrase he uses is notorious for his support of unorthodox ideas.
That's great. That's exactly what that group needs. Oh, and here's another thing we should at least think about. Is it a possibility that these tests were somehow compromised?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because what we mean when we say compromised is, was there, some sort of intervening variable that was not found otherwise? Like the first test that NASA Eagle Works did with, Feta's engine, I believe, they tested it, but they didn't test it in a vacuum. So people responded by saying, well, of course it appears like something was happening. It was somehow receiving some input from the surrounding environment. So they responded by testing it in a vacuum. But NASA, who I feel bad for, man, because you know NASA has to dodge these overly hype science journalist, I'm sure, constantly.
Yes, with the BuzzFeed titles.
Right, right. NASA reporters hate this shuttle. Find out why. They were quick to say, like, this organization is not researching a warp drive, because that was the headline,
yes.
Right? But that's not the only other con. There's another big con, right?
Well, yeah, this wouldn't in no way be a warp drive. It might get people, you know, to the moon in a few hours if it worked, let's say. But you're not going to reach the kind of speeds that you would need to go warp speed or faster than the speed of light.
Right. Yeah.
That's not going to happen. You won't be able to get to Pluto, let's say, just to go out and argue at it that it is or is not a planet, mm-hmm. and then get back, you know, the same day.
Yeah, and this has been, it's got to be disappointing to a lot of people, because you read this headline about warp drive, but it's not, it wouldn't be warp drive the way that Star Trek is warp drive. You're not going to some infinite velocity, and at this point, even if humanity did possess some kind of engine or thing that was capable of this sort of propulsion, we do not have the material science to build anything that could withstand it.
Yeah, how do you move?
Yeah.
How do you move anything else with that drive? How does the drive even go that fast?
Yeah, we would just be shooting an engine by itself into space. And maybe it came, maybe we find it from an alien civilization, and maybe they couldn't build anything that could use this as an engine. So maybe, the entire story of civilization in this galaxy is people shooting around this engine because everything we build around it falls apart.
Guess what?
What?
I think it's time to write a short story.
That's a pretty good idea, isn't it? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if it works out on the watch. But there are pros. I know it sounds very negative right now, but there are pros. There may well be something occurring here, because these three groups testing the same, pretty much the same device,
mm-hmm.
have found something, right? Or they say they found something.
There appears to be something. And perhaps we don't use this device exactly how it's built now. Perhaps, you know, like we said, perhaps it's nothing and we can just throw it in the trash and forget about it.
Sure.
The people inventing it can move on to something else. But if there is something there, we could use that as a starting point.
Right. And this concept of people accidentally discovering a warp drive sounds pretty cool, right? But mm-hmm. what I think we would end up looking at is finding a small, I don't know, a little discrepancy, a glitch in the matrix. That's how a lot of big things start, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see that water tends to bend light. We see these tiny things in the world around us. And if we can just obsess over them enough and ask the right questions, then eventually we can arrive at amazing realizations. And there's something inspiring in that, but let's be honest, and I know we're a family show, but let's be honest, that's a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a lot of time and it's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And we'd like to know what you guys think about it. If you'd like to hear some more technical information about this, then we have good news for you, because our friends over at Forward Thinking, all three of whom have made an appearance on our show at some point or another.
That is true. Yes.
Yeah. So the same crew, Joe, Jonathan, and Lauren, they have an episode on the M Drive right now that you can go check out as well. We hope you enjoy it. We have some other stuff, like we talked about. and Soloptic Energy and Radionics. And we talked a little bit about Jade Helm. But before we go, we would like to do a little bit of listener mail.
Our first message comes from Marty, and he says, "Hi, Matt and Ben. Have you ever done a show on televisions and other equipment in our homes and their ability to spy on us?
Oh.
I think I've watched most of your shows, and I don't remember one on that. Please forgive me if I missed it." Oh, sir, you're forgiven. Either way, you do not need forgiveness from us for any reason, but please watch the rest of our videos. Okay, so as I'm typing this, I'm also wondering about the newer vehicles and their surveillance abilities. Oh, he's putting stuff together, Marty is. Or is that the stuff they don't want us to know?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that our phone and emails and texts are being watched by the powers that run our lives and dictate what we can or cannot do or have, all for the security of the corporation we live in. Or maybe it's just for the security of the elite that runs the corporation we live in. Yeah, that sounds more like it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like this Marty guy. He's interesting. Anyway, just something to think about. Keep up the good work as long as the powers that be allow you to do so.
Whoa. So, Marty, I think that's a very good point, because this is something that we've talked about before. And Matt, you know, this is a huge soapbox for me. What do you have? I don't want to.
Well, I will just say that I have not upgraded my television for a long time, since smart TVs have been around. I've got tape on my front facing camera on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrified about my vehicle being made in 2004, which is, I think, right around past the cutoff date for when your car can be hacked easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I live in this guy's world. I understand what Marty's saying. Like, it's scary how much surveillance occurs on each human being at all times.
The good news is your car specifically, Matt, I think could only really be hacked if someone had direct access to the ECU. They'd have to plug in.
Yes, it's in that weird middle ground.
Yeah.
With the ECU can be hacked. But yeah, you can't, like the new Mercedes, you couldn't somehow remotely get into the computer. I hope.
Wait till check out the stuff at DEF CON, right? That's usually where you find that out. And we've done some episodes on hacking here at How Stuff Works. Mm-hmm. In general, we've done some episodes on car hacking. Here's why this is such a great and frightening point, Marty, because the you'll remember, maybe, I don't know how old or young you are, but you probably remember how for years people would say, this is paranoia. Who could possibly be that important that we would do that? And that makes a little bit more sense before the computer age, honestly, because mm-hmm. back during the civil rights era, right, when people agitating for equal rights as human beings in the U.S. were doggedly pursued with wiretapping and with letter tampering and things like that, that took concerted physical effort. But what happened?
You had to be in the room next to the person having a meeting and literally tap through the wall
right.
with a mic.
Yeah, you had to find agents. You had to have feet on the ground. And even if you were in a headquarters, you were still like mailing people stuff and mm-hmm. making phone calls on landline phones. What I'm saying here is that we encountered a gift and a curse of sorts as a species in the computer age. The cost of information, and let's measure that by the money it takes you to send a message somewhere or the time it takes for that message to travel. Both of those reduced. It is now cheaper to talk to anyone than it has ever been before, and maybe ever will be again. But with that means it's easier to collect more stuff. You don't have to wait and intercept physical mail. You just have to have a shunt at a room in a cell phone or an ISP provider, right?
Yep.
And that shunt goes directly to a collection warehouse somewhere, and it's just hoarding that people might not ever look at it.
Information hoarders?
Yeah. I would love to see it. There's like one episode and then we would get canceled. But this thing is, it's not as crazy as so many people wanted it to sound. Mm-hmm. And Marty, I think you might enjoy how many of the people who said this was, you know, some bizarro dystopian fantasy now have all of a sudden switched so quickly to say, oh yeah, well, everybody knew that for years. Yeah, when you were the one saying it was crazy. But that's just, you know, that's a cognitive dissonance, right?
Sure.
People are very good curators of their memories, especially the times when they wish they had done something different. But we see this happening in video game consoles, and I think it's an excellent question about cars, because the monitoring for cars is going to increase at a faster pace than many other things, partly because it's going to catch up to current technology, and partially because there is the push toward autonomous cars means they're going to leapfrog over a lot of earlier surveillance technology, partially for insurance purposes, a lot of it.
Did you see that article? Marty, maybe you saw too. There's an article about Google's driverless cars and the number of accidents that they've been involved in.
Was it 3?
It was 11, I think, out of 1.7 million miles traveled.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if I'm completely correct, but I believe that 1 million of those miles approximately were done completely driverless. And I think 7 of the accidents happened during that time. But it never, ever was it the autonomous car's fault.
It was a person.
Yeah.
It was always like another driver on the road.
Yes. Or
I know at least 3 times it was. The laws that in states that allow for autonomous testing like this, they, just to be clear, they do still have to have a driver engineer in the car.
Yes.
Sitting in the driver's seat, they're just not driving, ideally. Mm-hmm. And I guess 7 times they tried. No, I'm kidding. I hope everybody's fine. But yeah, you're right, Marty. And I've got a question for you. We'd like to hear back from you on this. Do you think that it will be eventually illegal to drive a car manually?
Ooh.
And if so, when?
Wow. Or will it ever be illegal to have the camera on whatever device you're working on, like your computer or your television?
Taped over, turned off.
Will it ever be illegal to not have it on?
Mm-hmm. Will you get fined if you close your eyes, right?
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror reference. All right, we'll do one more letter because I apparently had to go on a monologue. Sorry, Marty. All right, so Jimmy from L.A. writes to us and says, hey, Ben and Matt, thanks for the outstanding work. Let's address Jade Helm 15. As a former soldier, joint operation training was common, usually conducted every 6 months. The reason for the training was to get multiple units to communicate and maneuver effectively during tactical operations. When I was overseas in the early days of Operation Iraqi Freedom, I witnessed units accidentally shoot each other and move to unfortified positions under the command of brigade commanders. The results were disastrous by the loss of American and Iraqi lives. The training was supposed to quell officers' egos and get them to work in unison.
Wow.
Many officers, lieutenant colonels and colonels, were jockeying for a general's promotion. The orders from these promotion-crazed officers was getting many soldiers killed by aggressive operations and lack of cooperative playing between the units in the quest for advancing their resumes.
Wow.
The paranoia, in my opinion, he's talking about Jade Helm here, was caused by the Texas governor giving validation to the right-wing conspiracy theorist accusations and the dispatch of the National Guard, a waste of taxpayer money. Again, thanks for the show. Keep up the good work. Best regards, Jimmy from L.A. And he has a P.S. question, too. He says, is the new format for the new year to make less traditional videos, more vlogs and podcasts?
Oh, okay. Well, so maybe should we address this in
Helm
order?
Yeah, okay. Let's be in order.
So that's really interesting to get that insight. And like we were saying at the top of the show, we were getting all kinds of insights from different perspectives. That is something I've never thought about before. The internal motivation. Yeah, the competition amongst military members. Hmm.
You know, I completely get this, too. We know that there is a huge necessity for these kinds of things. But I don't know if a lot of people think about what would happen if you just had a poorly trained military just dropped off in some place, given a tank, given some more armored vehicles and saying, well, we've seen, take this city.
We've seen some examples of that with different groups. I don't know what you would label them. You either label them insurgents or freedom fighters, depending on which side you're on. But small armies that are made up of people who are just fighting in, let's say, their hometown or their home state. Like in everywhere, like all over the, we've been seeing it more and more, unfortunately, where you just have people with weaponry that perhaps are not trained with that weaponry. And or, you'll see accidents or, you know, an RPG goes off in the wrong way.
Friendly fire. Or have we just been hearing more about it? And also, Jimmy, I am on the same page with you, at least about the cause of the paranoia regarding Jade Helm. Again, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know what kind of exercises are going to be conducted and what the effect is going to be on the local population, right? What if you drive somewhere and roads are closed or something? But I do see a point here to respond to with the Texas National Guard. That's what Jimmy's mentioning in his letter. If you guys recall, in our videos and in our audio about Jade Helm, we talked about the relative autonomy of the Texas military forces, right? And the National Guard being called in made some people feel that the state level governance of Texas did not trust the federal level governance of the U.S. But then I think there was somebody who, it was either on YouTube or email, had also written in and said, well, this is part of a normal reserve operation. They're they're mobilized to be on reserve the same way they would be if something was actually going down. So I'm not sure which it is, but I'd love to hear from some listeners on that. And Matt, I've got to toss the question to you regarding the question about less traditional videos, more vlogs, etc.
Okay, yeah. So our show has been evolving ever since it's come out. It's very different from our first CFR episode, I think.
It's always a work in progress.
Oh yeah, sure. And we're trying to make improvements. That's really what we're doing. We're listening to feedback. We're kind of seeing what works and what doesn't on our end. And, you know, I think we're coming up with a better version of our show right now.
Yeah, we're also, we've still got the, not just the classic episodes, but we've been looking at case by case basis stuff too. Like there's some stuff that where the story is better told to the old format. There are a few things that sometimes for ethical considerations, we are not going to do as an old, as an old style format thing. Like there's some very messed up things in the world that are better suited as an audio podcast, perhaps.
Yes. And also there are several things that we've tried to cover that we just can't find footage for. And you know, rather than make an episode that just has stock images all over it, from VideoBlocks or somewhere else, we think it works better, when it's kind of told like a story.
Yeah. And we know that we see the division sometimes, on YouTube comments, especially, and we appreciate the support as we move forward. I think, you know, the first couple of blogs we did were well intentioned, but, little CFR-ish, you know.
Hey, we are learning, man. That's what we do.
Yeah, and we're still learning. And hopefully we're learning stuff that is worthwhile for this show. This time we talked about another current event, which we're going to have to come back and check on when we hear some of the final verdicts about the EM drive. It might disappear from the news for a few years the way it did in 2012. When the Chinese team first reported it. But it might turn out to be a pathway to the stars or just a very simple variable that we missed. But I'll tell you one thing that so fascinates me about all this stuff, man. I'm one of those suckers for that Sagan speech. I'm totally on board about going to the stars. I would sign up. And, you know, I knew Mars, the Mars One thing was probably going to be a scam, but did I apply? Yeah, I did. I thought it was a very awkward conversation to have with like family or dating partners to say, oh, hey, what are you doing? I'm signing up for a one-way trip to space.
Oh, well, all right. Well, then I'll just, you know, make you dinner. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm going to mom's by myself. Yeah. Right? But yeah, I think that it is an important thing for humanity to do. I don't know if it will occur in our lifetimes or even if we'll have a colony on the moon, but I keep a sharp eye on anything that might further that goal. What about you, man? What do you think about this whole engine?
I am hopeful. I mean, this engine, I don't think much is going to come out of it. I am hopeful, though, that either some of the plasma propulsion systems or some other system, including perhaps a space elevator, are going to work in combination to get us to a point where we can, you know, turn the moon into a Death Star.
Right. Hopefully a life star. I don't know. Like, doesn't George Lucas own the rights to the phrase Death Star?
Oh, no. Uh-oh. You're going to have to beep that, Noel. Sorry.
Yes. Let's hope the UN resolutions hold and the moon belongs to the people. But as we see, copyright infringement is becoming a bigger and bigger deal every day. Cough, cough. TPP. Cough, cough. But this brings us to Noel. We gotta ask you this question. It's pretty important.
Yeah. Please listen up, Noel.
All right. Weigh in for us here. Ghostwalker, would you take a one-way trip to space or to live on a different planet?
Oh, I thought it was going to be I thought I was going to have an option.
Okay, or
stay here.
Yeah, well, I mean, one way? Like, how long? How long do I have to go for?
Forever.
Yeah, one way.
What will the amenities be like?
There will be like a town, and there will be people there who have been selected based on, like you, their attractiveness, their wit.
The only store is Hot Topic, though.
Boy, you're making it free. Okay, see, here's the thing. I would totally take a one-way trip into space right now. Mm-hmm. And Matt, I don't think you would, right?
Absolutely not.
Right, so I think we're both trying to sway you to go into the
trip. I would need more information. You're not, this sounds very suspicious.
What if you were the first person on the planet?
Whoa.
You got to land and say the thing that would be later, there'd be a statue of you.
You had a selfie stick with an HD camera.
A space selfie stick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say no. I'm gonna go with a no. No.
I respect you guys, and I'll miss both of you very much.
You're just taking off, Ben?
I thought you were just going to shoot your ashes into space, Ben.
You know, I was thinking about that. Now, listen, I know that might sound morbid, you guys, but I think I would like to save up for the whole body. Because if I discovered an alien floating through space, I wouldn't want to think, oh, man, somebody wrapped up all this space dirt. This
just
is
the
worthless.
Frozen body, the frozen carcass of...
Yeah.
Oh.
But in a cool pose.
Like, okay.
Like maybe with a guitar. I don't know.
Or a selfie stick.
It's going to be expensive. It's going to be my version of a pyramid. I'm going to work all my life on that one.
Hey, man, we're here for you if you need anything.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Maybe a Kickstarter.
Well, let us... thanks so much for listening, you guys, and thanks for weighing in there, Noel. Let us know what you think. Would you take a one-way trip to space? Would you hop on a warp drive machine if you had no idea if you'd ever make it back? And of course, more importantly, what do you think of this M-Drive? Do you think it is, think it's real? Do you think it's bunk? Let us know. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Let's see. We're all over the place, right?
Yeah. We're conspiracy stuff with both of those. Mm-hmm. You can go to stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.